welcome back to Light It Red. This is our second to last episode. It's just that time of year we're running out of time, so it is what it is, but we've got to wrap it up. So we had three guests scheduled for today and they all canceled. So
awesome.
We got some good content today because although a lot of things have happened in the sports world at NC State, and there are a lot of narratives that we could discuss, a lot of postseason stuff, we're going to focus on basketball today.
The biggest one.
This is the biggest thing that's happened in sports all year, for sure.
For NC State, yeah.
For NC State. I think even nationally you could make an argument that
For the whole month, yeah.
this run as an 11 seed has garnered a lot of attention, so has DJ Burns. And so why not, you know, cash in on that? Dan Patrick's cashed in on it. Rich
we're
Eisen,
just like Dan Patrick.
Rich, yeah,
same level.
All the big players in sports have had a podcast about NC State, except us. It seems like the past 2 weeks. So we got some catching up to do.
Yeah, we're a little late to the party. Had some stuff going on, but we are here now. And I just can't really believe it's almost surreal. It's almost surreal because obviously we had picked our. It was surreal even before.
That they made the
NCAA tournament. Yeah. This whole. It's just crazy that this insane run that is not even really comparable to any ACC school ever and only really comparable to like two other schools all time in the history of college basketball is happening to us this year. Like, it's just insane. It's insane.
Yeah, and are you talking about just being an 11 seed making it this far, or the
just
men
like
and the women?
From going, well, even like the combination, obviously more focused on the men just because they weren't even supposed to be there, you know. But just a combination of like 5 wins in 5 days, boom, and then you make it very last seed, go to the Final Four, like that stretch has just almost never been replicated. Like UConn is really the only thing. It was way back when. But when they won the title and when they were a low seed in the Big East a long time ago with Kemba Walker, they came to the tournament as like a 3 or 4 seed. Like we weren't going to be in at all. And so I think that's why it's almost unprecedented what has gone on with NC State and the basketball program this year. But then you also add on that the women held up and killed it, and now they're in the Final Four as well. So just the whole combination of that, like, I think it's really cool that we're here and reporting on it for what might be one of the greatest seasons of college basketball at NC State.
Yeah, I think it's important to make sure that one doesn't take attention away from the other, though, because even though the women had a very good regular season run, they came in as a 3 seed, and obviously women's college basketball is very, I guess someone would say, top heavy. There are a few very dominant teams in the country, and that is what it is. The talent is not
there's not a lot of parity.
Distributed. They were not supposed to go to the Final Four. So I think at this point, the men are certainly not supposed to be as far as they've gotten, but neither have the women. This is this is not, I don't think, what anyone expected.
They're a 3 seed. I think everyone else around them is what, a 1? Is UConn a 1 as well? Or
UConn
are
is actually a 3.
A 3? Okay. Well, UConn, as a program, you look at them as a 3 for women's and be like, okay, well, this is clearly, like, we're not underestimating them. Like, they could easily be a top tier. But with NC State, it's like it's taken a while for them to really get to this point. They've had to build a ton, and they finally reached it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with that, but it's also interesting you say that because one of the first regular season games they had was against UConn.
And they beat them, yeah.
And they beat them. So I think,
obviously, that doesn't, you know, one win doesn't equate to you're better than this team holistically, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think they're tested and proven, and they had ups and downs. They lost to Virginia Tech twice during the season, but at this point, it doesn't. They made it to the Final Four. They knocked off Stanford. They knocked off
beat 1 and 2 seed.
Right,
they were
Texas
projected
and
to lose
Stanford. They had Cameron Brink on Stanford. She's going to go number 2 in the WNBA draft. They knocked off Tennessee in the second round. They have Rekia Jackson, who's supposed to go number 3 in the WNBA draft. So, I mean, who on NC State's supposed to go whatever in the WNBA draft right now? They're just a good team. They have 2 guards that are really good, and then the rest of it, I mean, the bigs are playing well, and so they're doing great as well. And I think that they have a tough road ahead, just as tough as the men. We've got Purdue for the men and South Carolina for the women. Those are two very daunting teams.
Yeah.
Two teams that have been good for more than one season, too. So I think what we can do is, well, what I first wanted to do was talk about what we have said previously about these two teams and just revisit kind of what we said about Kevin Keats and DJ Burns and maybe take some accountability, because I know that I've said that I didn't really have expectations from the men's team.
Well, I don't. You could say accountability, but so does every other human. Like, it's, you know, I mean, maybe I guess you more so because you weren't really as big of a fan as DJ Burns, because he was like a very popular and you were kind of like, I just don't think he's as popular. But Kevin Keats, you know, it wasn't a secret he was going to be fired. It just wasn't. There's a possibility that if the, which I always go back and think about this play, because it literally is weird to say, hey, this created everything. But to think like, hey, the Michael O'Connell guy misses four free throws in a row. The dude that shot the free throw at the end of the game, he was like, I think that was the first time all year he had missed two free throws in a row. He was like an 80-something percent free throw shooter. He was the best free throw shooter on Virginia. First time ever. Wow. He missed two in a row, I believe. Or in the fourth quarter, he missed two in a row or something. It was like the first time. And then he just gets this obvious, like, on the run, off the backboard, three rolls, and it goes in. Like, that, he could have been fired if that shot didn't go in.
Kevin
like, it's
Keats.
A very, it's a real possibility, yeah. So, you know, because that one was before Duke. Or was it after Duke?
It was after.
Or after Duke, yeah. But even after Duke, it was like, okay, it's still there, but, you know, maybe you could get to the title game at least and hopefully do something there. And obviously, he's totally safe now. But even before that shot, you know, his job was in jeopardy for sure. Like, that wasn't really a question. I didn't hate him as much as other fans did, but it is kind of funny because I do think we do a good job, I would say, at least of not being super biased and like being like, hey, we did say this and we said this. Like, you know, obviously with the social media world, some random guy commenting on an Instagram post, no one's going to go back and look at it, you know, be like, hey, unless you're a major figure who tweets something, you know. But you go ahead and look at any post about NC State before that. They hated Keats. They wanted to get rid of him. Like, everyone, fans hated him a ton. And even if you just go to games, they would boo him when they announced the coach, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, he was not a favorite at all. So I think credit to him that he is, you know, basically saved his job and more so in terms of just the tournament run he's done in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't expect this to happen. And I mean, we could go into some of the games in the NCAA tournament, because the ACC tournament we kind of covered last episode. But yeah, I mean, that it happens, you know. He, credit to him, but I think it was justified for him to maybe be questioned about his job.
Yeah. So I want to talk about Kevin Keats and I want to talk about DJ Burns. I think that, first of all, I want to say that I was in Dallas for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, so I have some insight on some of these moments that we're talking about. I did talk to Kevin Keats about that situation with him, you know, being booed and feeling like, you know, he was on the hot seat. I talked to Michael about the shot, and I talked to DJ a little bit, but, I mean, I'll talk about my stance on DJ Burns from earlier in the season compared to now. So I'll start with Keats. What I asked him was, I asked him kind of how he persevered through that situation. I personally never booed him. I didn't get on the bandwagon to that extent. However, I do think that in sports, it's easy to kind of petition for change, and then the first thing to fall is the coach, right? Domino, is that the right word?
Yeah, especially in college sports, you know.
Yes. It's the job security is not super great, especially when you factor in the amount of time he's been here. I did ask him about that, and he said that the first 4 years for him weren't really fair because they were undergoing an FBI investigation. Obviously, I was not here. You were not here. I didn't look into that. I think it's about the Dennis Smith Jr. thing.
Yeah, I assume it's definitely saying it plays into recruiting. We have no clue if he like maybe had awesome people lined up and they were like, nah, can't do it because of the FBI thing. Maybe we can take his word at it. You know, I'm not sure 100% if that was there because there's also FBI stuff around a lot of other programs that have gone on and they've still gotten a lot of people to come there. So that's neither here nor there. But
yeah, no, I like what you said. I mean, the point is that the recruiting was hard. And so I think he said that, I mean, the COVID year was kind of a bummer. And then obviously last year they made the tournament and then this year they made the tournament. And I think he made the tournament one other year.
Yeah, maybe his first or second year.
I think it's been 7 years.
He never won a tournament game. This was his first year that he won a game.
Right. And that is a big thing too. Making it is one thing, but you know, you got to produce at some level.
Which I do think it also goes to show like it does take a while for this stuff to really mature in a lot of sports. I mean, NBA, NFL with like players and obviously in college and building programs. Like it doesn't just happen at like the snap of a finger, you know? Like when Roy Williams first got the Carolina job, he lost to bad teams. Calipari, which his job may be in question now, but he's still a very good coach, we know. When he first got Kentucky, he lost to like some scrub programs, and sometimes they still do. This year they lost to UNC Wilmington. So sometimes losses or maybe seasons happen where it just didn't go right and it looks like a failure and you're like, this needs to change. But I think the biggest credit to him is just like this. We had a million transfers. Like our whole team is transfers, and it seemingly did take a while for them to really gel. And I think I don't want to fast forward in our, you know, conversation, but just talking about him specifically, like, you know, I think with all the transfers that we had, it was going to take a minute for a lot of them to gel. It was just, it came at the perfect time and it probably happened later than a lot of people expected.
Yeah. And that's definitely a narrative that they're driving home. Everyone on the team is basically saying something along those lines, because that's really the only way that you can explain it, I think.
Yeah.
I think even for them, it's like, well, you know, this is the way it's going now. The talent's always been there, but it's starting to really come together. So it's very cool to watch it unfold. And then as far as what I said about DJ Burns earlier in the year with him, I think... Now, I don't even know if I can quote myself, but the attitude that I kind of maintained about that was I wasn't super comfortable with him being the best player on the team, which was kind of what I felt like we were being set up for, with us not knowing really any other player in the starting lineup or on the bench for that matter, except for like Casey Morsell. And, you know, Casey was, I would say, the third or fourth option last year with Terquavion Smith and Jarkel Joyner, and then obviously Burns comes along later in the season. He was on the team the whole year, but didn't really blossom until later in the year. But it felt like the attention on Burns was just like too much. I think it was too personality driven, and people were going to have these expectations of him to be this great basketball player. And like, we all knew that he couldn't really, I mean, his defensive skills are lacking. I watched him foul out of the Creighton game in the other tournament, and I just was like, really not on the hype train for DJ Burns. And I think what's different now, you know, I don't think I was necessarily wrong in the sense that Burns as the number one option is going to be the best for the team. I think the team has really taken turns at who is going to be the best player that night, especially with DJ Horn. DJ Horn was the leading scorer all year. So I think you could make the argument that Horn is probably the best offensive player on the team. When Burns gets going, he's pretty unstoppable though as well. So I think it's important to give Burns his flowers here. And, you know, I feel like I was wrong in the way that I didn't think that he would be able to produce at the level that he has produced in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect soliloquy of your previous thoughts to now. Like, I don't think any of that was unrealistic. And it made sense. It was just, obviously, coming at a bad time now, just because of the magnitude that it was, like the games that he was performing in. But, you know, what, the second or third game, last game of the regular season, like he had a game where he had 0 points because he had like 4 fouls in almost the first half, you know? And I think whether something clicked or maybe it was a bunch of good matchups, but, you know, a lot of it was like, hey, don't get these dumb fouls. Like, don't get these dumb reaching fouls to where we have to take you out of the game, you know? Or maybe other teams where it's like, you got to get back here on defense, you know? Like, we can't just do this. He was always talented. And I think, you know, for sure, I would say at least Horn is a more reliable, or maybe not. Horn is a better volume scorer.
Which, because of the threes.
Yes, which he has been hitting. So obviously, if you're doing that, then it helps out a lot of other people. But Burns is more reliable in the fact that he's got his moves and they just work, you know? Like, they just straight up work, and it's just been on display for everyone, and it's such a fun just style of basketball. And obviously, his personality is so fun, and he's a really great guy that it does heighten his general just player in general and his talent. But, you know, I think that's a fine explanation for basically everything. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like we said, last game, I think he was a leading scorer, but
he wasn't.
McCain
had like 32.
Okay, yeah. Or no, I'm talking about from just state.
He was a leading scorer. Yeah. He had 29 points.
So the biggest thing is that he's come up in like the moments when it matters, you know, like he has at least been consistent, and it's been other guys around being like, oh, this is going to be a Diarra night. This is a Middlebrooks night. This is an O'Connell night. Marcel's relatively consistent. You know, I think he had one game in the ACC tournament where he had 20 plus, but hasn't really been anything, you know, to that extent.
I think he had one of the games in Dallas. I think it was the first game. Him and DJ Horn had a lot of points what team did they play? Marquette?
Yeah.
They did well against Marquette. Burns actually had, I think, only 4 points against Marquette.
Yeah.
But he was passing well.
That's the thing. They doubled him. And that was a terrible idea. It was very bad.
To double him?
Yeah. It was terrible because...
Well, then Duke doesn't double him, though, and he scores 29.
Well, they don't double him, but they were leading, you know? And they had chances. They did. But Marquette had no chance.
Right.
They doubled him.
Yeah.
But, I think doubling him, I don't think is bad, but doubling him the entire game is bad.
Yeah.
You got to switch. You got to.
He can pass too.
You got to change that up. Like, it's got to be in spurts. Like, if he's backing someone up, then you rush in, try and fluster him. But you don't stay there. You got to be like, it's got to be someone who can also get back. So they got to be lengthy to, like, get in there and maybe get a swipe in or deflect. And then if he passes out, you're not just stuck, you know, having two people on Burns and he doesn't have the ball.
Yeah.
So that was there. That was Marquette's. That was part of Marquette's issue, which we can go through the individual games. But did you have one more player or something that you wanted to talk about?
No, I just wanted to say that I think Middlebrooks and Mo Diarra being there, and then Keats just kind of like really learning how to cater to DJ Burns' strengths over the course of two seasons has really added to the success with those two guys who can play good defense and rebound. Which Burns just doesn't excel at as much. I think that really helps the team, and it's shown, especially I think Diarra is really blossoming. There was a guy that I talked to that said, you know, of all the players on the floor right now, I think Diarra could really be the one to play in the NBA. And
probably. Yeah.
I think it's true. He'd probably be like a second rounder, undrafted, but he definitely has like the body type and the rebounding skills to probably...
He's also only a junior.
Oh, is he?
And yeah. So he is hopefully going to be here next year, and he might not be the offensive focal point, but in terms of, like, just looking at guys, which also, credit to Keats, I think it did take a while, like we said. Probably could have happened earlier, but I think we had already known beforehand, like, everyone has their role, and that's kind of what it is. And it took him just a while, I think, to figure out, okay, this is where each player should be in this system, and this is how many minutes they should get. Because, you know, the starting rotation didn't start with O'Connell and Diarra starting, you know?
Remember when we went to the exhibition game?
Yeah, we went to the exhibition. O'Connell was off the bench.
No, O'Connell started
the
exhibition
game. Oh, did he start that game? And he wasn't even...
He was bad.
He was not good, you know?
He turned it over a lot, and then in the first game of the season, they brought Jaden Taylor in to start.
And then, you know, there was a portion with Taylor and then Dennis Parker both getting a lot of minutes. They had thrown in like Brennan Pass. Sometimes he played a good amount. Sometimes he didn't. I think LJ Thomas had some times where he was in as well.
He actually isn't with the team anymore.
Yeah, he's literally left. So yeah. Obviously they had to fill that role, but it changed a lot. And DJ Horn, like in the beginning of the year, he wasn't this like, okay, this is our number one scorer. Like that wasn't the case. So I think, again, it came together at the perfect time, but I do think part of it was it took a while, but the coach finally being like, okay, this is the good rotation. This is what we do. And if we could speak on our run a little bit, I don't want to downput them or anything, but obviously when you have some sort of insane run like this, that's hard to really categorize or predict, luck is involved, which is just true. And I think it's okay to embrace it because it's like, who cares? It happened, you know? Like, we're doing this. Who cares if it's lucky? Which is a totally fair way to look at it. I'm just saying if we're looking at it objectively, like, we do have to say, you know, obviously the shot. The Virginia game is the biggest one, you know?
Hey, can I interrupt you for a second?
What? Yeah.
What do you think Michael said about that shot? Because I asked him, I was like, I think this is the way I phrased that I said, does it ever feel overwhelming to think back to that moment and realize that it created this kind of butterfly effect?
Well,
what do you think he said to that?
The only time I actually was able to speak to him, like, briefly when they came back on the bus from the ACC title game at like 3 a.m. in the morning or whatever. But, and I like mentioned, I like yelled it out or whatever, like, how about that shot? And all the players were like hyping him up. So my interpretation, or at least just baseline, would be like, he doesn't seem to be a guy to be like, oh yeah, like that was me, like I'm like this. I assume he'd be extremely humble about it. And just from briefly talking with him, that's kind of the guy he seems. Is that kind of what his response was?
Yeah, he barely even took credit for it.
Yeah, that's kind of what he feels like.
I think he said, like, it's just another shot kind of deal. Like, I've made shots like that before. Not like of that magnitude he specified, but like he said, other guys on the team made shots to get us to that point. So.
Which you could say, like, oh, yeah, like, it's just BS talk, but I don't know. That just kind of feels like he actually means that, you know? Like, I think when I mentioned it, the players were, like, genuinely like, yeah, like, thank you for bringing that up. Like, almost like they are also like, dude, like, you killed it. Like, you did this. Like, he deserves his flowers. He's probably one of my favorite players on the team. His arc in terms of, like, liking him has been insane. Like, I didn't really know who he was to start, which Stanford had two good transfers, Harrison Ingram to Carolina, and then we got O'Connell, both from Stanford. And I
thought Ingram
didn't know
went
a ton.
To Louisville.
No, he was a Stanford
guy.
Was
he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I didn't even – clearly they didn't succeed, obviously, but he luckily blossomed at the end. But he's probably one of my favorite players on the team, to be honest. I think he's just been – consistently hitting his threes, like, does it, one of the better passers on the team. I like how they inserted him at point guard. I think he's been really well. And obviously the shot, you know, helps move it up. But going back to, like, just looking at our run holistically, like, obviously the ACC tournament, I think the biggest accomplishment we had was beating Carolina, for sure. I think that. Fully healthy, best Carolina team there, and I think that was awesome. You know, probably the best one we had, but in the tournament, obviously, you know, I did not, and I don't think a lot of people did, at least ones that follow the tournament a lot, say, hey, for sure, this is going to be a Final Four team. Just because, obviously, an 11 seed, like, that's a low seed to make it, but the path for NC State for this tournament, really, we got probably the best hand we could, to be honest. Like, Kentucky losing in the first round was gigantic. Because when I saw Selection Sunday, I'm like, okay, we can genuinely beat Texas Tech. I have no problem with that. But Kentucky, it's like, shoot, like, they want to get out there. They're very fast paced. Like, they want to shoot it. Like, we're a solid 3-point shooting team, but we're not amazing. And DJ Burns having to go at this high pace, like, it would worry me, you know? And that was definitely a concern. And I was like, we could win, but it's not, are we going to get into a shootout and, like, score like 90 points? Like, I just didn't see that. But we didn't have to play him. We didn't have to play him, and we still almost lost. Like, people forget. We went to overtime with Oakland. Like, and Jack Golke, we did a relatively decent job stopping him, but not – I mean, he still had, like, what, 5-6 threes?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He
you
still
can't
killed
stop.
It.
You can't stop the way he shoots
no,
the ball,
he's
really.
No, he still killed it. And we literally went to overtime, and we dominated overtime, obviously, after. But in regular, you know, just non-overtime play, we got close to losing. So that was worrisome. But then, you know, Marquette, I don't know about you. I didn't have Marquette going to the Elite Eight in any of my brackets. I do two normally. I had them losing in the second round in one of them and losing in the Sweet 16 to another. And, you know, obviously we could say, hey, we didn't like Marquette at all, but they are still a two seed. And if you look at that game, I saw a stat that said Marquette, just of teams this year that shot at least 30 threes in a game. So they shot at least 30 threes in a game, which seems like a lot, but there's been 1,330 times where a team has shot 30 or more threes in a game. And in this game versus NC State, they had the second worst shooting percentage from three out of those 1,300 plus games, which is insane.
Yeah.
And if you watch the game, you would know, because they had some, now we defended some of them well, but they missed some wide open three pointers to where I'm like, dang, okay, like, lucky that's not going in. So yeah, it felt like we controlled the game the whole time, but they totally could have got back in, like, for sure. And I think they just had a pretty off shooting night, and combined with Shaka Smart's just not phenomenal coaching. Like, I don't think he did a good job of just the way he coached that game. We had talked about it.
You're not a big Shaka Smart guy.
No, I'm not really. I think he had his one good run, but since then he hasn't done anything. That's kind of why he got fired from, you know, Texas when he was there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he's a good adjustments coach, and it proved. Like, he double-teamed Burns almost the whole game. It's like, well, you can't do that. You need to do it in spurts. Like, you can double-team him occasionally, but at the start of the game, he has no points right now. Obviously, he's a threat, but I think you should start throwing out double teams when the guy becomes a threat. And he obviously didn't score a lot of points, but he opened up that, with him being double teamed, that opened up the floor for everyone else, and he's an awesome passer. So if you're going to keep two guys on him the whole time, someone is going to be open if he can pass. You got to do it in spurts, and I think that was very bad. But, you know, then we get to play Duke. We don't even have to play Houston, which I definitely, even after if we won these three games, I don't think we would have beat Houston, because they are such a just insane defensive team, and I just don't know if we would have been able to handle it. But we didn't have to play them, unfortunately, because with Houston playing Duke, their best player, Houston's best player, got injured, Jamal Shedd, I think it was the first half.
Yes.
And they still only lost by three.
Yeah, and let me just say, I was at that game, and the energy in Texas,
I'm sure it died.
Oh, my goodness.
That's terrible.
Hey, we're so upset. That everyone was rooting for Houston. That
yeah,
was the,
to
well,
be honest.
Not everyone, but like a lot of the people there yeah. were rooting for Houston.
Well, as someone who was like obviously wanting State to go far, I would have rather play Duke for sure, clearly, because
yeah.
I didn't think we would beat Houston. But it sucks to see that happen to a player like that. But Duke ends up winning, and we get to play Duke, which I was not – I was a tiny bit nervous, but I also was kind of like, I think both teams have an edge. Like, NC State obviously has been like, we're the underdog the whole time, but Duke could also be like, hey, this team beat us. Like, we can't take them for granted, you know? But I think I think Duke this year, if we're all hitting well, it's just a great matchup. Like, Burns just owns Filipowski. He just can't really do anything. Like, he's a much better finisher. Filipowski's really tall. But if he's not just nailing threes, he's relatively useless, you know, because I think DJ Burns can easily score on him. And he had a very bad game, you know, And I think other guys did a pretty good job defending, and boom, now we're in the Final Four. So it does take some luck not facing certain teams, certain other, you know, players or teams not necessarily playing well, but not necessarily due to us playing amazing defense. But luck has to happen if you're an 11 seed making it. And I think they, you know, even if we, which we can slightly preview it, I'll let you, you know, say anything if you have to. We could preview both games that we have. But I think even with the luck that we've had, it's still going to be one of the greatest just runs by any team ever in the tournament.
I agree. And I was, I mean, making it to like the Sweet 16 by itself is like a big deal.
Yeah, even that was like, okay, wow, this is, I would take this. Start, like, this is cool.
You know, start printing the shirts, you know? The shirts are in the Wolfpack Outfitters right now.
We went there. They literally had Sweet 16 shirts. No one is buying them because they want the real one.
But you make those shirts because that's an accomplishment, and that's something that you get a banner for and you hang in the rafters of PNC Arena. But what was really cool about them beating Duke and making it to the Elite Eight, or I'm sorry, the Final Four, was not only that they beat Duke and not only that they beat Jared McCain, but...
I hate him so much.
I figured you might.
Yeah.
They got a trophy for that. You know, they got they are South Regional Champions of the NCAA Tournament in 2024, and no one can take that away from them, just like no one can take away their ACC title in 2024. And so, regardless of whether they win or lose to Purdue or they're winning or losing to UConn or Alabama, whatever happens, I just don't think you can really take anything away from this season and this run, and everyone's going to remember it forever. And everyone's going to buy an Agromech yearbook. And everyone's going to pick up a technician tomorrow. And we're riding high. So
yeah, I totally agree. This doesn't matter what happens after this. It's still phenomenal. I've been able to touch both trophies, by the way, which is really cool. The first one, the ACC one, I went to go see him at night because I wasn't able to go to any of the games. You know, other people have priority over me in terms of like getting passes to go, and then
womp womp
for this. For no, I'm not calling you out because you deserve to go for sure. You were at Agromech longer,
thank you.
And technician already went to the first round,
right?
So,
well, no. I mean, let's just preface here, these guys are paying out of pocket. So, our student media team,
that's what I was gonna say, is
there's no money to be going to this stuff. So, we got photographers and writers paying out of pocket to go stay in hotels, book flights, and go cover these teams, and so.
That's what I was gonna,
you know,
because the first ones was them paying for it, but NC State did not have any plans in the budget for their men's and women's team to be in the Final Four. So anyone going to cover the game, obviously they get a pass to the game, so it's free, I think. But
oh yeah, no, there's no charge for the seat,
but flight, anything else, food, living, all on them.
Oh,
which
yeah.
get
there on your own.
We calculated. I think it's probably a little bit over $2,000. And if I were to do that, which I considered and I asked a lot of people, I would have to pay out of pocket myself, and I can't do that. I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I'm being a Debbie Downer and like, no, it's not worth it. And if you're going, like, that's awesome. You probably have way more money than me, but you do. But because there are adults I know that are going to be going, because it's like, dude, it's like the first time in 40 years. You might be 50 or 60 and you would want to do it. And I'm like, well, then I'll have money to go and do it. But I just, as a financial person, it's not for me.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. At least we're going to school here when it happens. And they can't take that away from
us. Ever, which is so cool.
And there will be a celebration on campus with whatever happens. Whenever they come home, they will be greeted, I'm sure. So even if we're not in Phoenix or not in Cleveland for the women, we will be here in Raleigh, and I think that's almost as cool.
Yeah.
So
being able to say, like, forever, like, yeah, we covered the, even for us specifically, obviously all students can say they went there, but for us specifically, like, both of us have been and interviewed both men's and women's players and coaches on this team for, and been, like, in the men's locker room. But we've talked to and interviewed players and coaches for both men and women through the whole season, mm-hmm. before all of this stuff, especially with men, before they blew up, you know? And I think that's also really cool to be like, yeah, we covered this team. You know, like, we had talked to these coaches. We'd asked Keats and these coaches and players and stuff. We'd asked them questions, and then for them to be like, yeah, now they, like, reached this point, I think is super cool. And we're going to forever be able to say, like, we were here. And very engaged when they won. And maybe, I mean, we don't want to speak too far into the future, but hopefully, and maybe this is a kickstart. I mean, the women's, I think, have built something good. I'm not really worried about them, though. This will only get them more recruits. But for the men specifically, like, maybe this could be like, hey, we're starting to get higher recruits. Because obviously, we're not winning these games because of recruits, you know? We went heavy on the transfer portal, which I think maybe this is a sign. It is a sign, and I already have this opinion, that transfers, I think transfers in 2024 and beyond are going to mean more than recruits. Because I think with NIL and college basketball, obviously you have recruits that you want to bring in and build up, but a lot of guys in their first year, if they're not getting enough playing time, they'll just bounce. They'll dip. I've seen it with so many schools, and I think if you can just get these guys who are experienced, have played, I mean, go ahead and just check the starting lineups for March Madness teams before you watch the game. I do it a lot. The teams that have like graduate or senior under them, a good amount of times they're the ones that are winning because they're the most experienced. They don't crumble under moments. Like Kentucky, a lot of people had thought their talent is going to prevail. It was very good, but it was part of the reason they lost because they got freshmen, a ton of freshmen. And I think that's part of the reason that they're not winning as they should. And you got UConn. UConn's not signing all these five-star prospects. UConn has almost, they had previously two walk-ons that are starting for their team. They built it through, yes, they might get a high recruit, but they get transfers or they have other guys that they slowly try and build up and they don't just try and go for the best players and then they might leave immediately. And NC State has four graduates on their roster, one junior, and I don't even know if there's like, there's not a freshman that's getting major minutes, you know?
Dennis Parker.
He's probably the only one, but his minutes have declined throughout.
He's not playing right now.
No, and yeah, exactly. His minutes have declined throughout the season.
Yeah.
He hasn't gotten any sort of play. They've focused more on the experienced players, but I think maybe for State, this could be like, hey, we can get at least more big name transfers, but also maybe just some more recruits that want to stay. That's the biggest thing. You got to have them to want to stay. And hopefully we can get that. And maybe players look at how much fun just these guys are having and be like, yeah, I want to be here. Like, this is where I want to be. Because next year it's going to look very different.
Again, for the second
again,
year in a row.
Yeah. Which that doesn't mean it's bad because this year worked out. But again, you always have to look at it as like, hey, this is kind of what we're looking at because four of the five guys in our starting lineup will be gone next year, you know? And we're going to have to find, obviously, another scorer and everything like that. So maybe this gives us more attention in being like, hey, they've won with transfers. I want to come here. So that's at least looking at them in the future. But now we can end it off just by going over these matchups that we have. To end off the season.
Sure.
If you want to start and you can give your opinions, we can start with the women's first.
Yeah. I wanted to say that I agree with you. I think success with the men's basketball team is going to lead to something greater. I think you the goal is to leave it in better condition than you got there when you got there. And I think that's kind of the case with what's happening with this team right now. And also just success across multiple sports.
Yeah, for sure. We didn't get to go into all of them, but we'll get into it next episode. But we've done
right
swimming, gymnastics, wrestling, like baseball successful. We're killing it.
Right. I'm sure there's some like connection between football and basketball. People consume those sports kind of together. So I don't know, just younger athletes. And then you got California athletes that are going to be ACC, Texas athletes that'll be in the ACC, you know. So it'll be different for sure, and I think in a good way. But yeah, you wanted to talk about women, NC State versus South Carolina and NC State versus Purdue?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that South Carolina has basically a lot of talent.
yeah.
I know that they have Cardoso. That's the only one I know by name. But what I've heard is that basically their starting lineup and their bench is like two starting lineups.
Yeah. They
Final Four caliber starting lineups.
They're kind of like UConn. They don't have
men or women.
The men. We can use like obviously the women's players for example. Like they don't have a Caitlin Clark or a Paige, at least in my opinion, a Paige Beckers or anything like that. But they may not have like a top 3 or 5 player, but they have like the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th 11th, 12th
sure.
best player, you know? So that's kind of what we're dealing with. And they haven't lost a game. They literally haven't lost a game. They have one of the best up and coming coaches, and anything's possible, obviously. And they got close, I believe, in their Elite Eight matchup or the previous one as well. Like there was
Oregon State got them really close. Yeah,
and we've beaten obviously phenomenal teams, as you said, in Stanford and Texas was a one seed. You had kind of said they were the unknown. One seed, didn't really know what to expect, and we got past them. But I don't want to – people are going to hate me after this episode just from my opinions on the Final Four matchups. But I think it's going to be very hard, surprise, to beat a team that is literally on pace to go undefeated and be one of the best teams in women's – like as good as, like, you know, the previous UConn teams where they won, like, four in a row. I mean, this is kind of what we're going up against.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. You're talking about like the top 10 players left in the women's tournament. Where do you think our players rank in the top 10?
Well, that's the thing. We're not. You know, I mean, you could make a list, and I don't think we'd have top five.
You don't think Isaiah James is?
She's probably, if she is, she's fifth. But there might be a gap between four and five. You know. Because I think the gap with one and two is insane.
Really? Wait, I'm curious.
With Caitlin Clark.
You think Clark is one?
I think so, yeah.
And Paige is two?
I think so, my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, I think Paige...
Maybe it's slip. Maybe I'm buying into like the national hype of her. I don't know. I watch her and I feel like she... There might be times where she gets the ball too much and is like missing four layups in a row. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, what are you doing? But then she'll make a... fucking, you know, 29 shot three, and it's like, okay, well, that's insane. Like,
yeah, 20, you said 29
or 29 feet? Foot, yeah, yeah. 29. It's like, wow.
Yes Caitlin Clark is that bitch, basically, if that's what you want to say.
But Paige is more
well-rounded.
Yeah,
she can play defense better, she can kind of do the things, the in-between things a little bit
which
better.
That's gonna be an awesome, amazing game between
oh yeah, 100%. That game, and then, yeah, I think that game will probably get higher ratings than South Carolina versus
probably.
NC State.
Yeah, probably. I mean, maybe in the middle of the game we come back. I don't know. I do, unfortunately, think we may be running into a buzzsaw, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least, if anything, we have the Final Four.
Yeah.
Right?
For both of them.
Okay. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I think if it all clicks, anything can happen.
Yeah. No, 100%. I'm not putting us out completely.
But it's going to have to be a pretty damn good performance from everybody on the team.
Perfection, basically.
South Carolina has a deeper roster, but I don't think Dawn Staley will run like maybe seven person rotation, maybe eight. But I know we run a shorter rotation.
Like, we're going to have Isaiah and Shania both.
You say Shania every time.
What is it? Shania. I mispronounced stuff.
It's funny because that's what the moderator for the NCAA said as well.
Maybe that's why because I've heard it from somewhere. I don't know. Yeah. I should have known it wasn't that. But normally, at least the games I've watched, it's like one goes off, the other one's not as much. There's rarely times where they're both going off. In this game, they're both going to have to be going for 25 plus.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, they're going to need Riverball. I mean,
yeah, River's going to need to dominate. Get every rebound, get 10 offensive rebounds if that's even possible.
Yeah.
Like,
I think the underrated part about NC State women's basketball is just River Baldwin's size. I think people like to gravitate towards the scorers, but I think River's really stepped up and done kind of the dirty work, if you want to call it that. So, I mean, she's going to have her hands full down low, absolutely, but I don't think there's anyone really more well-suited for the job than her. I think if she can do that, Isaiah James can knock down those threes, those Caitlin Clark threes. She's a lefty, so it looks a little different, but she's still doing it. Sanaya's hitting the pull-ups.
Which I don't want to go on too much of a side tangent here, but she's probably she's definitely my favorite player.
Sanaya
team.
Rivers?
Yeah. Isaiah's probably more consistent, relatively speaking, but... Rivers is probably my favorite. I just think her length and the way she can handle the ball and create her own shot and shoot and drive, like, I think she's pretty relatively polished. And maybe she doesn't, I don't know. I don't know if, I assume some of these people would get some sort of shot in the WNBA, but I like her game probably the most.
I agree. I like the way she plays defense, and then her offense has really blossomed this year. She's a senior this year. She started out at South Carolina her freshman year.
Yeah, so that's cool.
So there's a story there.
Revenge game.
And I like talking to her too, so I would say that she's probably one of my favorite players on the team as well. She's always, you know, smiling.
Yeah.
Really nice person, so.
We're rooting for them.
Definitely.
Hopefully they win, but it's going to...
Uphill
take
battle.
A lot. Yeah.
But that's what happens when you get to this point in the tournament.
Exactly.
There's really no way around it. There's not going to be a fluke team in the Final Four.
Yeah. I mean, if I had a gun to my head, I would say, okay, I'll take South Carolina. That if we're making full on picks, but like you said, anything can happen. It's very possible.
Yeah. Well, let's shift over to the other bracket with the men's tournament.
Yeah, we can finish off with the men's. You can go first.
Well,
and start it off.
I think we have Purdue. Purdue's the number one seed. I don't know if anyone remembers when we made our bracket, but we had Purdue winning it all. A lot of people did as well. They lost in the first round last year. We talked about how Virginia did the same and then came back and won the national title. Purdue is close to doing the same thing. They have NC State, the number 11 seed from the South region. So, I mean, it depends on how they play us. If they play down and they think, well, we're going to the championship, we're going to play UConn. If they look ahead like that, which, you know, I don't think UConn's coach is going to allow them to look past Alabama like that. But I would say that UConn and Purdue are both heavy favorites to go play in the national title game. I think Kevin Keats is going to have a game plan for Zach Edey, though. He's 7'4". He, you know what he's really good at?
Being
tall.
Yeah.
He's good at being tall. So that's great, but there are ways to play around that. There have been tall guys in the NBA. There have been tall guys in college basketball. He's good. He's the best player in the country, according to whoever votes on that. But I say you don't foul out trying to guard Zach Edey. Play him your best, put DR and Middlebrooks on him, not Burns, and try to take everyone else away. Let Casey, DJ, and Michael guard the perimeter, and, you know, hopefully Burns can come in and get some offense going, and you can go toe-to-toe with one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, here's the thing. So I think for the first round, we might have a better chance with the men's winning a Final Four game than the women. Just because I think the women are facing the best team, like for sure. And the men are facing maybe the best. And, you know, so that's that. But still looking at the game, there are literal fans, some analysts, not a ton, but actual fans that would consider themselves like, hey, I understand the game, who are picking NC State to win and like genuinely think they can win because they're like, well, they've done all this before. Like, why can't they win? I will say this team is is far and away better than our best win, UNC. They just are. UNC was the worst one seed. I think anyone that picked them to win was a very bad pick. I didn't even pick them to get to the Final Four. I had them in the Elite Eight for one of them. You know, so that's our best win. And I talked about the luck factor, but I do think you have to look at it and be like, okay, we beat Texas Tech. Middling SEC team, like they're solid, but they weren't amazing or bursting out or anything like that. Overtime against Oakland, beat Marquette, had one of the worst shooting games of the entire year, and then beat Duke, who we already beat because it's a great matchup for us, you know. Now we face Purdue, which there is a game plan for sure to win. Like, it's there. It just has to be completely executed perfectly, and the game plan has to be perfect. Which obviously, yeah, Kevin Keats will have something, but he has never faced anyone, you know, like this. We haven't faced Zach Edey or anyone to the extent of similar to Zach Edey, you know. And I think with what the game plan is going to have to be is, like you said, they can't get stupid fouls. You're going to have to foul Zach Edey because from what we at least have known with Purdue, Zach Edey's going to get his. You know, he's going to get his points. He's going to get his rebounds. You can't stop it, but you can try and make it difficult at least and make him take harder shots. And I think there is a time to have a good foul. And you can get good fouls. And I think that's what we need to have. We can't have just our bigs, at least, can't have dumb fouls. Like Middlebrooks, Diarra, and Burns are going to have to play a ton. They are like 6'10", 6'11", 6'9". Like they're going to have to play a ton. And not one of them can have like one or two off fouls. Because then it's going to throw off everything. So they're all going to need to be, you know, if they're getting fouls, which you're going to need to do, having good ones on Edey, which the thing is, Edey's a 70% free throw shooter, so he's not bad or anything, but he's going to get his stuff. It's just, it's going to have to be stopping other people from getting shots, but also getting yours. So a lot of it is going to come down to the guards, because I love DJ Burns. Unfortunately, though, he's going to have to get these shots, they're going to have to arc super high over Edey, and I think Burns is going to have to take a bit more shots, not necessarily in the paint, but near it, because Edey does not like being aggressive. The reason, which people hate Zach Edey, but in my opinion, at least, if they just sat and watched a game for once in their life, they would understand why he is good and gets fouled and doesn't foul out. He gets fouled, obviously, because he gets you don't know what to do with him, so he gets harassed all the time, but he doesn't foul because he's not aggressive. He's not very aggressive on defense. A lot of times, you can just watch. Someone might be going at him. Sometimes he gets out of the way, literally. Or that he realizes he's so large, he doesn't need to fully go in and potentially commit a foul to block a shot. He could just do it smartly, like slightly separated from the person. So with him in the paint, Burns is going to have to, he's not going to be able to back you up, fade away shot. Like it's going to be really hard. He's going to hardly even see the basket. So that's why I think Burns will try and get his points. But with him passing, if we're going to win, every single role player is going to need to play good. Every single one. Michael O'Connell can't miss like three. He normally gets like his three threes. Going to need to hit at least two of them. Morsell, going to need to hit. He cannot be taking dumb threes. Going to need to hit his mid-range shot, which he does relatively well. Diarra pisses me off sometimes because he just takes threes so much. And he's like a 20% free throw shooter. Or a three-point shooter,
mm-hmm.
And he's open a lot, and he takes them. He's gonna need to hit like two or he's gonna need to hit like three. He has to. He absolutely has, because he's gonna be open. If he hits shots, we totally have a chance from three. And I think Taylor is also gonna have to come in off the bench and be the spark plug that he was a game ago, and potentially get like nine or something like that. But the biggest thing is also gonna be defending. And that's going to be with the guards, because the difference in why we had been confident about Purdue is they're the second best three-point shooting team in terms of percentage in the whole country. That's why they're so much better, because you could try and stop Edey, but oh, he passes it out to Braden Smith, a name you're going to know, Fletcher Lawyer, a name you're going to know. Like, they have a lot of people who can make threes, and they just do it at a more consistent rate than we do, and we're going to have to try and stop that. You know, so the game plan is there, but every single role player is going to need to step up, and we're just going to have to potentially hope that Edey might miss some free throws, or they might miss some threes. Which, is that possible? Yeah, we've been the luckiest team in the country the past few, you know, weeks. But if I had to have a gun to my head and pick, I'm sorry, it'd be hard for me to pick NC State going against a matchup that they haven't faced and a team that, you know, yes, has choked before, but this Purdue team is different than last year. They just are, and I feel like we're on an inevitable Purdue-UConn road to the championship game, because those two have been, especially analytically, clearly the two best teams. And Houston has been in there, but Houston had an injury. And that's why that's basically why they're not here. I think if they didn't have that injury, they would be here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, if you just even want to look at historical stuff, we are the team that have the most losses ever in the Final Four. Like, to be in the Final Four, we have 14 losses. Anyone else, like, near our loss record in double digits, all have lost in the Final Four, like the first game. None of them made the title game. and they face probably easier teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. It's possible for sure. You just have to do everything we went over, but it's going to take some luck. We've had luck, but if I'm just having to pick right now, I think it's hard for me to just rely on luck, you know?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think you make some great points. I'll revisit what I said earlier. At this point in the tournament, you're going to get the toughest teams. So it is going to be the hardest win of the season.
If they win, though, they totally earned it. Props to them. Do I think they would beat you? Let's do a hypothetical. Because they would face UConn. I think they would.
Whoa. You're counting out mustache guy?
Yeah.
Alabama?
They have a chance, too. But I think they have less of a chance than we do.
Okay.
I just don't. Purdue, you very quick here. Alabama's best thing is offense. That's why they've gotten here. The best thing's offense. Illinois, who UConn beat, has like the first or second rated offense in the country, and they went on a 30-0 run, UConn did, in that game. So they didn't just score 30 points in the matter of like a few minutes. They stopped the number one / number two, it was back and forth, rated offense in the country to 0 points for that same time. Alabama could totally win if they hit their shots. Anyone can. And they are pretty good at doing that. But I don't think they stand a chance, to be honest. Yeah. I just don't think they do. So, unfortunately, I am counting out Mr. Mustache Man. And
what's his name? Grant
Nelson.
Grant Nelson.
Yeah. Sears is probably their best player. He's a point guard. But, yeah, I think UConn moves on. And if we face them, we're probably a better matchup for them than, like, at least we're a harder matchup for UConn than Alabama is. But I think UConn is just on a heater to get another ring. Yeah. I think the only team that could stand in their way is Purdue. That's it, basically. And they could totally win. But I'm looking at a UConn-Purdue final, and I would personally take UConn to win that matchup. But that's why I don't think people should be betting State to win at all. I know it's very good odds. If you want to bet on something, maybe bet on the spread for that game. I think we might be double-digit underdogs, maybe 8.5, 9-point underdogs.
I don't think it's I think it's less than double digits.
You want to maybe 7, somewhere around there, 8, 9, 7? You want to do that? Sure. Or you want to go crazy and go money line? Go for it. Do not bet on us to win at all, because it's just from who we've had to face. I think it's amazing we're here. It would be something that it's already like we've already basically since the start of the ACC tournament. If you were to say, hey, this 10-seeded NC State team is going to go to the Final Four, that's already analytically, I think, according to the stats, it was a 0.00079 chance. So near impossible. Doing these two teams would basically be impossible and would be the greatest thing in the entire world. So it totally could happen. I wouldn't bet on it.
Sure. I wouldn't advise betting either. So what a story it would be, huh? If NC State managed to beat Purdue.
I don't even want to think about it because I don't want to get disappointed.
Okay. Well, I'll end it off by just saying that the last time NC State played Purdue, first of all, we haven't made the Final Four since 83. Purdue hasn't made the Final Four since 1980.
Yeah, they're also fighting for a lot.
They want it probably just as bad, and it probably is harder for them because they've been good. They've had good teams come through and just not win at all.
But they didn't just lose to a 16. They lost to a 16, 15, and I think like 13 or 14.
Yes.
Like 3 years in a row, they've disappointed.
Yeah, so they're just as hungry. I mean, if you watch any Zach Edey clips of him talking after they won that game against, who did Purdue play?
Tennessee.
Yeah, he was talking, he was running his mouth, basically.
Which Tennessee was close because they have probably the best or second best player in the country in Dalton Connect. You'll see him in the NBA. I think he's going to be really good.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I'll just say the last time NC State, you know when the last time NC State and Purdue matched up?
It was two, 3 years ago?
21.
I think we...
2021.
Yeah.
Purdue was ranked number one at the time, and we lost in overtime.
Yeah.
It was a Darion Sebron-led team against a Jaden Ivey team, and Purdue won. But Kevin Keats was the head coach at that time, so he's seen Purdue before. he has not seen the Zach Edey Purdue.
No, he's totally different.
But, you know, it's something. So, you know, it's hard to beat a team twice, right? I don't know. But it is funny that we have matched up with them in recent years because, you know, they seem very distant from us as a program. So we will be back and we will talk about the results of the NCAA tournament with optimism.
Hopefully, yeah.
Regardless of what happens. And then we'll talk about some spring sports and then we will part ways and then try to figure out what the next step is, I guess.
For the semester.
With our senior year. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to Light It Red. Music in this podcast was Jonas Hipper's King of Sports and Vibe and Sneaky, licensed under Creative Commons from the Free Music Archive.